This podcast is intended for investment professionals. Hello, and welcome to LGIM Talks, a podcast for investment professionals. I'm your host, Mark Chappell, and today we're going to dive into the theme of robo-advice and the ways it has changed the wealth management industry. Joining me here in the studio to talk through this topic is Chris Barrett, Investment Director at JM Finn. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
And returning to the podcast once more to bring us his insights into the discretionary market is LGIM's own Matt Kemp. Matt, welcome back to the podcast.
Good to see you again, Mark.
Now, Chris, before we kick off in the world of robotic advice and management, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about JM Finn?
Sure. I work in JM Finn's London office, which is the head office. We're a UK discretionary manager. Mm-hmm. I work as part of a team that manage about 550 million of private client assets. We have been in existence as a business since just after the Second World War, I think. As you can imagine, the business has evolved over time. We were a traditional stockbroker. We have become an investment manager. And as we've become an investment manager, we've actually augmented that with other services around the side. So we are able to provide broader advice as well. But the one thing that we would always say distinguishes us from many of our peer group is we do believe we're genuinely bespoke investment managers, that when we walk into a room with a client, we go in with a blank piece of paper. We ask them what it is they're looking for, how we can help, what it is they don't want us to do. And then we build portfolios from there and over time manage those and hopefully manage those of their family and the next generation within them.
So the story we so often hear about robo-advisors is that these are the disruptors. They're providing the same service as traditional managers, but for a fraction of the price. But I imagine that this is a very reductive way of looking at what these new entrants have actually meant for the market. Chris, looking back a little bit, over the last few years, what has robo-advice changed? What have they brought to the market?
I think in a broad sense, they have commoditized segments of what the wealth management industry provides. Mm. And I'd say one very positive thing they've done is they've given access to the world of investment to probably a constituency of people who rightly or wrongly felt they were it was unavailable to them. Mm-hmm. And so in that respect, if you are a novice or a modest investor, you can now go online, set up an account very easily, and you're able to save on a regular basis or in a way that you might well have felt was unavailable to you because people like JM Finn, who use the phrase wealth management, I mean, wealth management in itself is a relatively imposing term, and it does feel like it implies you have to be wealthy.
Yes, it does imply that you have wealth to be managed, which, you know.
Absolutely, and that in itself is a... It's in the eye of the beholder, but most of us have a perception of what we believe wealth to be or to be wealthy is. And so I think in some respects, maybe they democratize slightly the access to the investment world and financial services that we have offered to our clients traditionally. I'm not sure that they have reinvented anything. Mm. I think that they have taken an element of what we do. They have made it very scalable by simply making it very simple. You are buying a product off the shelf and you effectively take it or leave it with a relatively simplistic level of filtering at the start of the process when you open an account with one of the robo-advisors. And then you end up being siloed and you have yourself an investment product that you can save into over time.
Mm-hmm. So not so much a like-for-like disruption then?
No, I don't think so. I think actually, if anything, it's quite complementary. I think in time, when you have been a customer of a robo-advisor for some time and there may be formative events in your life that come along and perhaps change your circumstances that make it more complicated, you are going to need to go to somebody that can give you ad hoc advice and do it on a personalised basis.
Completely agree. Now, Matt, you meet with so many discretionary managers. What's been your experience of the way robo-advice has changed the industry?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the robo side has certainly opened up the industry. I think the average age of a robo client would be a lot lower than a traditional investment manager's client. There are scary statistics out there, sort of when it gets down to the third generation, the money has then gone. So I agree with Chris to an extent. It's great that the younger generation with smaller pots of money can start getting access to the market, invest in the market. And with online portals, you know, you could be at the golf course, check your portfolio online and see how it's done, asset allocation's done for you, et cetera, et cetera. So it's getting more and more people investing in the market and understanding the market.
That takes me on really nicely to talk about kind of the way robo-advisors not just change the way their investments have been managed, but also their behaviours and their expectations from their managers?
I don't think robo-advisors have necessarily changed the way we operate, but certainly they may have led the field in the way that they've innovated. And when you look at the quality of their apps, say, that is the standard that we all have to meet. Now, I think that we would say as a business that we've gone beyond that because we can actually provide more information. And we have to. We run bespoke portfolios. We don't just send out generic information. We have to make it reflect the fact that those portfolios are tailored to the individual.
So it perhaps takes back to not just their expectations of the quality of their investments, but also the professionalism and perhaps the culture of their manager, of their openness, their willingness to engage and kind of really be at the beck and call and be present for these clients, as you say at the beginning, through those formative events, through and preparing them for the way that their perceptions of risk may change, but also where they might be spending their wealth or accumulating it in that sense.
Sure. I mean, I think that we probably, in terms of culture, certainly in the time that I've been working in the industry, you would have found, when I started, that there were a lot of sort of single-person operators. They have a book of clients, they had been their clients for a long time, and they were the only people that interacted with them, and they had a relatively old-fashioned relationship. That person would call them up, they would suggest that they undertake transactions if they felt it was appropriate, and they might see them once a year, or maybe less so, in fact. In time, that has become, and certainly in the business I work in, people operate as teams, and the reason you operate as team is because you want the continuity that when they're that one person isn't there, that you don't get a breakdown in communication with people. Now, as much as we can now provide a lot of information remotely, it doesn't require a phone call or a meeting with somebody to get that information that the client is looking for, and often it's relatively simplistic stuff, and it's around tax data or just valuations. If it's something that goes beyond that, you have somebody there who's available, who knows that person and can respond to it. And if they can't give them the full answer, they can certainly ensure that they understand when they're going to get it as well. So it's about continuity, I think, that we have all probably come together and been a little more collegiate in the way that we behave. I think our clients have probably got, and certainly we try and encourage them to do so, but have an expectation that when something happens in their life that affects them in some way financially, that they will probably give us a phone call before they give anybody else a phone call. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to be able to give them the answer. Now, as a business, we can provide some of those answers, and increasingly we have added on services that we didn't have 10 or 15 years ago. But at the same time, we can help them get in touch with the people they need to speak to and to provide that advice.
So it sounds like it's such a human and a team approach. It definitely doesn't sound like JM Finn is in any danger of becoming or rebranding or restructuring itself as a robo-advised firm.
No, but I think that we would want to say that we can compete with the attractive elements that robo-advisors offer.
Take those learnings, for instance.
Absolutely. So if our clients say to us that what we're looking for is something very simplistic and commoditized, then we can provide that. I think that we've seen some of our competitors try and launch products in this area, and there has been some mixed results.
Yeah.
And clearly, we've seen a couple that have had to abandon those plans because there just hasn't been the market for them. And I think that we, as a business, irrespective of whether we're talking about robo-advice or whether we're talking about our investment process or just simply the way that the company behaves, we have to respond to the values that our clients that matter to our clients. So if we are not doing that, then as a business, we are not going to be able to evolve in the way that is going to make our offerings relevant in the future.
So it's about being prepared for the future. Matt, jump in here.
Yeah, I mean, using an online portal, you can clearly get your risk done, your asset allocation and the fund selection done. But I know some robo-services where they actually are ringing the client and speaking to the client because the human interaction is a vital element of that. It's not monopoly money. You know, when you get down to putting your credit card or your debit card details into the system, you're parting with real money. So they kind of need that reassurance of a human interaction to go to the next step.
So to take that back into kind of, there can be a way that these two offerings kind of sit together. It's not necessarily a disruption. It's not the big bad robotic wolf per se. There is a chance for clients to use either a robo-advisor and a wealth manager or discretionary manager in kind of combination.
I think that is the case. I would say that we're at the early stages here, though, of what the robo-advisors can offer. And don't be at all surprised that as they become more sophisticated, as the technology gets better, and as they learn from their own experience, that they are able to provide more information and to tailor that a little better. But I think it's a bit like being in a kitchen. You can have the best ingredients in the world, and when you segment it down and it doesn't mean that you're going to be able to put it all together and turn it into something that people want to consume. And you need somebody there who understands how these things mix together. And I think that I've found, and increasingly over time realized, that you cannot assume that because you understand two people's circumstances and there is some commonality between them, that actually the advice is the same. It is not. And because we all react differently, and we all have different expectations and perhaps have different attitudes to whether it's risk or whether it's simply the manner in which we approach things and feel comfortable with them, we have to have the ability to recognise that. And that is actually about being a human being. And I find the likelihood of a robo-advisor being in a position to be that intuitive in the near future, unlikely.
So it needs quite a step up in smarts from the robo-advisor.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
Matt?
I agree with Chris. I think the two go hand in hand. And what it does allow wealth managers to do is keep hold of their smaller clients who technically could be made redundant. They might be herded into an MPS system. But some of my clients do use sort of robo-platforms, and it gives the smaller clients, you know, execution only, whole of market, and allows them to invest in funds.
But one of the key selling points about robo-advisors is, of course, cost. And we cannot ignore that. It feels like, of course, costs are going to come up in every conversation we're ever going to have about the advice market, about regulation, about investment managers. So they're offering what appears to be a service for relatively low cost, but I quite like to dive into two areas. Is it genuinely low cost, or is it more in line with the market? And is cheaper better? Is lower cost better value? And I throw this question to both of you. Chris?
Well, I think on the first element of that, whether they are genuinely low cost is interesting, because actually when you look at the starting level for some of the best known platforms out there, robotic platforms out there, they are not that different to the charging levels that we might offer to clients of a similar size. I think the misconception that you are automatically cutting out a lot of cost is not necessarily true if you are a smaller client. I know that some of the marketing material will definitely allude to the fact that the costs are at a certain level, but you need to get over quite a high hurdle rate to get there. Now, most clients, I would have thought, robo-advisors, as I understand it, statistically, are not anywhere near the hurdle rate.
No, if perhaps their opportunity set is closing that advice gap, it naturally goes towards those quiet customers, the ones with naturally lower than that threshold who might previously not have been targeted for advice or wealth management services.
Right, and I think that in terms of the scope of the advice, though, if you're simply taking them on a journey that says, are you more or less comfortable with this or more or less comfortable with this scenario, you have to question, is that advice or is that simply a decision tree where you are being funneled down to a moderated outcome? Is that genuine advice? And at any point, is somebody going to, or will that process ever stop you and say, well, actually, the best advice here is you shouldn't do this at all? And sometimes you have to have that conversation with customers. I know that we've done it. Matt, I'm sure sometimes you have to do it. You're probably loathe to. I know we are. But you, for the sake of their own good, and for the sake, actually, for the good of the business, sometimes you have to say no. And I do wonder whether that happens with some of the robo-advisors.
Interesting. Matt?
We have to be transparent with our costs, and we have to show the clients get value for money. It's not easy to outperform the market. You need to get a certain percentage growth over and above to make the client happy. So cost is clearly a very big part of what we're doing, but equally fund selection and choosing the right funds and getting the alpha is more important.
There is an important distinction between cost and value. And the headline rates of what we charge and what we might charge clients indirectly by the virtue of the use of funds through third parties doesn't necessarily tell you what value you're getting. value is about what you're paying for, giving you back something in excess of what you might otherwise get for the cheaper option. Mm-hmm. And the conversation I had this morning with this client, I was explaining that we're working out on the back of a fag packet basically what the cost had been of him holding a couple of funds over quite a long period of time. You then compare that to the performance of the underlying index, you compare that to some of the peer group, and actually he was far better off. Mm-hmm. And it's not nice when you get a letter that says, by the way, not only have you paid JM Finn this amount, but you've also paid this other amount to all these other people. But the fact is, it was worth it. Mm. And paying 3% for something that returns you 10% in excess of a benchmark is infinitely better than 0.5% that doesn't return you any excess at all.
It's so interesting that kind of brings back to your point, Matt, about transparency, of being very clear about this is the benefit and this is the value that you've received, not just the cost that you've paid.
Agreed, yes, totally.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. To begin to wrap up this conversation, I'd like to ask you to do both a bit of crystal ball gazing. Chris, you've mentioned that RoboAdvisor is not so much a disruptor, more a widening of market, kind of opening up this market to investors who might not otherwise have known that this opportunity of investment management was available to them. So what happens next? Where do they go from here? Do you see more of these kind of competitors try to integrate robo offerings into their existing propositions, or something completely different?
Well, maybe I'm a little biased on this. I think that the incumbents, the traditional incumbents like JM Finn, will end up incorporating more of what the robo-advisor has, that ground that they have opened up, and trying to make sure that we cover more of that ground in our offering. I think some of these robo-advisors, that already there have been some that have struggled, some will continue because in the end they are businesses. They do need a critical mass. When you're running the kind of business model they are, it's all about scale. They need volume. And if they cannot keep recruiting new and larger customers in terms of the AUM, then it may well be that they struggle until they can start bolting on higher margin elements to their business. If the technology doesn't allow that now, then they probably have a gap where they need to fill that gap until the technology is good enough that they can start doing some of those things. But I've seen some of the advisors have broadened their offerings. They are becoming a little bit more sophisticated. But they also recognise, as much as we all recognise, that if you're a saver today in the UK, you are far more empowered than you ever were. You do have access to your pension savings. You are going to have to take care of your own sort of critical cover and your short-term funding requirements. You're not going to be able to rely on the state to do it, or certainly not your employer either. And so as you empower individuals to take control of these investments, that they have an opportunity really to engage with those people. But so do we. And I think that we probably have a more compelling case to providing a more holistic approach to the way that people manage their investments and, frankly, manage the transition between the generations of their families as well. And we can help engage with our clients with difficult conversations they don't want to have with future generations. And I think that quite often, I mean, we produced a report on wealth across the generations and segmented it by just demographically. The biggest challenge for people of over the age of 70 is having the conversation with their family about what happens when they die, in effect. How do they best manage the transition of wealth during their lifetime? How do they manage the tax aspects and also the responsibility that puts on a generation after them? Now, having a professional in the room with you who is prepared to have that conversation and maybe take away some of the awkwardness and bring some structure to it is, I would have thought, extremely useful to most of our clients at some point during the life cycle. And I don't know how easily the robo-advisor can get into that area.
Matt, this idea about kind of the industry continuing to evolve, continuing to innovate while maintaining that kind of all-important bespoke nature, what's been your view for discretionary wealth managers going forward?
Well, for me, it's still providing a personal service. I mean, networking is key, meeting your peers, sharing ideas, and I don't want that to ever go away. However, just to reiterate my point earlier, I still think robo-advice is very good for the smaller clients. With tax-efficient solutions such as ISAs, people should be using that, and it allows them to invest in the market. So I'm all for it. I think it goes hand in hand. There will be a day where maybe I can sell to a robot, but at the moment, I think I'll struggle.
So I think that's a very, very nice note to end on. And I think that's all we've got time for. So, Chris, thank you so much again for joining us here.
Not at all.
And Matt, thanks for coming back.
Pleasure.
And if you'd like to read more about the Wealth Across Generations report, Chris, they can find it on the website?
Absolutely, yeah. If you go to jmfin.com, you'll find it on our website. And I suggest that there is something there for every generation.
Well, that's amazing. And of course, we've also linked to the report in our episode show notes. Thank you again for listening, and see you next Wednesday for another episode of LGIM Talks. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.